Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back and a very, very timely conversation we get to have with Mr. Nate Papura, Director of Content at eHealth, eHealth.com, and they've also got eHealthMedicare.com. And Nate comes back to us. He's been on the program before, so he's a repeat offender. We're glad to have him back because Nate knows a lot about this health insurance thing going on with the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and what's going on with some legislation. We've done that. Now we've got some judicial action that could affect how the Obamacare program continues to work or doesn't, or the nature of products. So we're glad to have Nate back. Nate, welcome to the program.
David, it is very nice to be back. It's good to talk to you.
Well, I'm glad you're back. You sound good on radio and you're a smart guy. And you know what you're talking about. So that makes for a good guest.
Right. That's all. Just sound nice and sound like you know what I'm talking about.
That's
check.
It. That's all
I've
you need.
It.
Check. You got it. All right. Well, Nate comes to us with his work at eHealth. For folks who haven't listened to the program, give them the quick overview of eHealth and what you guys are about, and that'll give them some perspective on where you're coming from to be able to give us some insight into what's going on with the Affordable Care Act and all of that.
Sure. So we're an internet marketplace for health insurance products. So everything from the individual products you buy for yourself if you're self-employed or a small business owner. We sell small group insurance, and we sell Medicare products. So we're licensed in all 50 states. We have about 180 different insurance companies selling products on our platform. So we're sort of like the Amazon.com of health insurance. We've been around for 15 years, so we predate the Affordable Care Act, and obviously it's had a huge impact on the, particularly the individual health insurance products that we sell for the under 65 market.
Okay, good. That's perfect. So. That's good, because people need to know where you're coming from, that you guys... what you're doing, and you, in particular, Nate, what you are tuned into with all this. So let's dive in, because this is a big topic, and a lot of people are not aware of it. What is happening right now with the Affordable Care Act? And I know that there's some, I don't want to downplay it. There's actually a Supreme Court ruling that may come about a lawsuit that could affect the viability of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, going forward. So give us a little bit of background and tell us where we are.
Yeah, so there's a case pending before the Supreme Court called King versus Burwell. And in a nutshell, if the Supreme Court rules for King, it will mean that if you're receiving a subsidy that helps you pay for your health insurance, which is something that the Affordable Care Act created, it will say that you cannot get that subsidy unless your state built a health insurance exchange.
Okay.
So that's a little bit complicated, but basically when they created the whole law, they said, okay, every state, we're going to give you money to go out and build your own basically version of eHealth, what we do at eHealth. Go out and create your internet marketplace. And the insurance companies will put their insurance plans up there, and your residents can go buy them, and then the federal government will give you those residents a subsidy to help them pay for that insurance. And what they found is most states didn't want to go into the e-commerce business. They mm-hmm. said that this is a lot of expense and overhead, and for a lot of different reasons, they didn't go into it. So the federal government built healthcare.gov, the now famous website that, mm-hmm. that had a really
infamous.
Bad launch
yeah.
the first year.
Mm-hmm.
It did better last year, obviously. And so 37 states rely on that federal website. But the language of the law, just because of the way the law was originally put together, in some places it makes it very clear that you can only get your subsidy if you buy your insurance through a state exchange. And then some other places, it seems like it's okay to get your subsidy through a federal exchange. And so that's the nature of the debate. And the net-net, if you're a consumer, is if you're in one of these 37 states that did not build its own health insurance exchange, the court could rule sometime this month that you're no longer eligible for those subsidies because your state didn't build the exchange. And then, all hell breaks loose. There's a lot of things that could happen. They could stay the ruling until mm-hmm. the next enrollment period or a couple years, so the subsidies could stay in place for a couple years.
Right.
But they could go away right away.
Wow.
And, we have about 580,000 customers in the individual market, and about 90,000. We ended about 90,000 last year with subsidies. And we surveyed, and most people had never heard of this ruling. So, you know, the people with subsidies, if the subsidies were to go away tomorrow, that would be obviously a shock. You know, you're paying $80 a month for health insurance. The subsidy goes away, and now your full price is $300, $400. That's, that's a non-starter, right?
Yeah, that's a big deal.
So it's a big deal.
So, okay, so a little bit of, let me back up a little bit and kind of weave my way through some of that, make sure I've got it right. So the case is about really an interpretation, it's interpretation of the law and how the law is applied as it relates to individual insured individuals who are applying for this coverage to be able to get the subsidy, that it is through the, it has to be through a state-run exchange.
Correct.
Okay. And then, but most states didn't do that.
Right.
Okay. And then if they say, okay, no, the law says this, we're strictly interpreting the law, then that basically means that the subsidies cannot be given for those people in those 37 states, which is obviously 37 out of 50 or so, is the bulk of the population of people that are through these plans.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And a lot of this wasn't just to put a little bit of a political flavor on it, which you can't ignore for this whole thing,
sure,
is that there is, for those 37 states that didn't, they obviously some of those states, or maybe all or part, whatever, it was also, we don't want this thing. It was kind of a, you know, state governors and or whoever made the call in this, or the state legislatures. Was it, do you know if it's at the state, at the governor level, or if it's at the state legislature level, and whether or not they would have their own exchange?
It's a little bit of both.
Okay.
It'll depend state to state, but
the authority,
you know,
probably rests with the governors, and a lot of them are,
yeah,
I mean, let's just be honest, a lot of them are Republican governors.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, look, the reality is, the concern, part of it was very fiscal, right? I mean, it's
right,
one of the things that goes along with building your own exchange is
it's
expanding
cost.
Medicaid,
yeah,
which is the biggest expense that most states have. It's
sure,
usually 50% of their budget.
It's huge.
And so they get a big portion of that from the federal government, and the federal government was going to give them more temporarily to expand Medicaid, but eventually that assistance goes away, and so the governors are saying, well, you know, we don't know if we can afford this,
right?
And then we don't know if we can run an exchange, and we've seen now most of the exchanges are not doing very well. They're not hitting their numbers. Hawaii's exchange is out of business. You know, Oregon's exchange, they shut down. You know, a lot of other ones. California hasn't hit its numbers. So, you know, I think it's, I wouldn't say it's necessarily totally political. I think some of it is these guys are making what they thought were smart fiscal decisions at the time, and we've seen that the Medicaid enrollment, so Medicaid is for, you know, very low income families, all of in many states the Medicaid enrollments have exceeded what they thought they would be. So a lot of fewer people are necessarily buying the Obamacare plans, the private insurance plans with the subsidies, but Medicaid enrollment has been much higher than anticipated. So,
right,
you know, I think you can talk politics, but you can also talk sort of fiscal reality. Some of these governors would say, hey, we made the right fiscal decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to mention, you know, or at least acknowledge the pink elephant, no pun intended, in the room, that there is, you know, is a political element to this, but you're spot
sure
on, Nate, that there, it is largely financial, and this judicial ruling from the Supreme Court is very likely not to be political, but to be more, look, this is what the law says, that's the way it's got to be. Now, the subsidy you mentioned is a pretty significant amount that makes these plans affordable for people that otherwise wouldn't be able, separate apart from the insurability standpoint, but just simply the cost of acquiring the policy, and that subsidy, that's taxpayer funded.
Yes.
Okay. So that is, that's money coming from taxpayers, it goes to the government, and then is being basically used to subsidize, hence the word subsidy, the premium payments that people who are on this platform and getting these plans. So this is kind of a clawback, if you will, of taxpayer dollars that the Supreme Court would be saying, look, you can't get those dollars to pay for the health plans.
Right.
Yeah. Boy, I tell you what, it's a complicated world we live in, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. So with this effect, you mentioned 500,000 people earlier, Nate. Is that the number of people that are on plans with subsidies?
Oh, no. I was talking about our particular
okay.
customers. But no, I think the number is they've
it's bigger than that, right?
7 to 11 million people.
Okay. So that would affect a lot of people.
Could lose their subsidies, yeah. Yeah. So it's a very big number.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a very big deal, and we're glad we have you on the line with us, Nate, to come back and talk with us. Nate Papura, ladies and gentlemen. And he is with eHealth, Director of Content, eHealth.com. And, of course, you can go take a look at all of the available plans they have there, as well as eHealth Medicare, which is, of course, for Medicare. And that's at eHealthMedicare.com. Quick break. We'll be right back with Nate.
Are you looking for convenient, straightforward financial information? Just say no to superficial sales presentations. And yes to the free Real Money app. Get David Holland's new app for your smartphone or tablet. Just search Real Money with David Holland at your mobile device's store. You'll be able to access 17 educational TV shows, plus hundreds of radio shows and financial columns, all in the palm of your hand and on your schedule. So very easy and so very important to you. Again, to download the free app, search Real Money with David Holland.
Hey, we're back. All right, Nate Papura on the line with us. Thank God we've got Nate to help us sort out this Supreme Court and Affordable Care, Obamacare Act and plans and what's happening with the subsidies. The subsidies are in jeopardy. So let's walk through, I guess, a couple of scenarios, Nate, and I'm glad you're with us. Nate's Director of Content at eHealth, eHealth.com. So talk to me about, we'll go through a couple scenarios. First one, let's say they rule that nope, doesn't matter, really that's a technicality, or you know, there's more to this. If they've got that, they can have the subsidies, period, we're done, then life goes on, nothing really changes.
Yep, we continue business as usual.
Okay. And then if they say no, and then they have some sort of time period, if it's immediate, or maybe it's, you know, they give some opportunity for people to make other arrangements and say, okay, we're going to go one more year or whatever, then what happens then? Does that we'll take it in a couple levels. First, does that then basically kill, quote unquote, kill Obamacare?
Well, I think it will. I mean, and if it's a year or so from now, I think you know, you'll see some changes made. I mean, I think the reality is that this is very important legislation for people who are lower income to have access to healthcare. It has lowered the cost of health insurance for, you know, the single mom, the early retiree, somebody on a fixed income, or somebody who's working a couple jobs, and you know, and so even with these very sort of robust plans, it's made this insurance more affordable for people with the subsidies. The people without subsidies, it's made the insurance more expensive. You know, a plan you used to be able to get for $200 a month is now $300 or $400 a month. And so I think that, and when they passed it, you know, because there was so much sort of tension in government at that time, you know, you remember the way they passed the bill was sort of through a budgetary trick, and they never really did what they normally do, which is get together and work out the details.
Right.
The House passed a version, the Senate passed a version, and they just mashed the two together, and I think that's part of the reason you get this problem. So a lot of the problems with it, I think, should have been fixed out with sort of a bunch of grown-ups in the room saying, how do we make this work for everybody? And that just didn't happen because there was so much bitter partisanship.
Yeah,
and so
that's
if it does happen, and you get a couple years to work on it, and you get a, you know, another presidential cycle in place, maybe you get to something that is makes a little bit more sense for everybody, because you know, you've helped a lot of people with this, but you've impacted some middle class folks too in a negative way, and that's an unintended consequence. And so, you know, hopefully that's a good outcome of this, is that we go back and we try to find something that's more workable for everybody.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I say we, not you and me.
I know what you mean, Nate.
And
I think for a lot of people listening to us talk about it, you know, there's certainly people that have strong opinions and feelings about it. And, you know, some people, I'm sure, think, hey, look, this is a good thing. You know, the folks on the other side just need to suck it up and deal with it. And then there are people that think, well, first of all, you pass this thing, through a maneuver, it wasn't really passed, and you kind of smashed it together as you described it. And then there are also other people that when they hear you or me or anyone talking about, hey, this made this affordable, it really didn't make it affordable in and of itself. It's that, as we've talked about, the subsidy that largely makes us affordable. And that really is a taking of tax from one person and giving that money to the other person.
Very true.
That's where a lot of people, and I personally sometimes really struggle with this, Nate, because I know people that, that they have this program and without it, they wouldn't have health insurance, and I feel for them. And then the other part of me is like, well, but, you're taking money from someone and you're giving to someone else. And that's where this thing got kind of, I think, it got some of its baggage, if you will, is it stopped at the train station and all this baggage was added to it. And, maybe you're right. If this ends up being, stopped on the tracks, continuing the analogy, that they have to stop and rethink this. And maybe after another cycle, they can actually put it through a normal process where it's not this reconciliation of the different plans or legislation that was passed by the House and the Senate. And the reason why we had to go down that path is after that last election, I'm sure you recall, Nate, that there wasn't enough votes to get it back through again as it was.
Right.
So they had to do it the way they did it, So it certainly is something that weighs on a lot of people. So I'm glad you're with us to help us kind of unwind this.
I talk to a lot of customers, and you will have a conversation with one person that is just so grateful for this because they never had health insurance before.
Sure.
They relied on charity care.
Right.
And then the next conversation, you talk to somebody who's like, look, we're 60 years old, and we had a plan that was affordable, and now it's three times as much, and it really impacted people, both positively and negatively.
Absolutely.
And I think the thing that strikes me is that the cost of healthcare is really high, and
it's a
system that needs a lot of reform, and
that's a fundamental issue, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so it's good that we've got more people with access, but it's just really expensive, are we going to solve that problem? There's a lot there, the important thing right now though is that you've got opportunities to access care, and you want to do something that works within your budget, and that's always the trick.
Yeah, that is a trick, and it has affected. You are right, and I'm glad. Some people, they don't really want to recognize that this has had a brutal impact on some people that are not benefiting from it. They're the ones paying the bill, number one. Number two, they've seen their health insurance costs. It's costing us as a company, Nate. It's costing me, I think our current cost now is like $7,000 a person a year.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I won't, first of all, I won't give my employees a cheap plan. It's a quality plan, but it's costing us $7,000 a person. And I don't shove that onto them. We pick up 100% of the cost of the employee. If they have a spouse or child, they have to pay that difference, but we pay for 100% of the cost of the employee. So we've absorbed, 16 or 17 years, 18 years worth of health insurance increases because of the fundamental challenge that you mentioned about the healthcare medical industry and the health insurance related to that. So this most recent period of rate increases over the last couple of years, no one can say that all of what's gone on hasn't caused my rates to go up, and they've gone up significantly. So that's a real cost that here I am, a small business owner, I'm having to bear that.
Yeah.
And that's brutal. That multiply the numbers. I'm not asking for anybody's sympathy on that, Nate. That's just a nature of doing business more expensive. Where if I didn't have that extra cost, I might be hiring somebody.
Yeah.
I don't mean to make it get off target, but there's certainly, I guess, my point, I'll stop talking about this issue, is that, this has a very large impact, and it is very intricate and interrelated in our economy, and those consequences, if this had been quote unquote maybe done with a normal process, maybe some of those things could have been anticipated.
I mean, it'd be nice to think so.
Listen, I have to confess, Nate, and my listeners know this, I'm an eternal optimist, so I hope we can figure it out. But let's grab another quick break, and we'll talk about maybe some alternatives if this does get unwound for people that currently are participating in these programs. Nate Papura, ladies and gentlemen, Director of Content at eHealth, eHealth.com, and eHealthMedicare.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
When it comes to finding a financial advisor you can trust, do you know the right questions to ask? David Holland has written a popular book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy. Or if you want to meet one-on-one with David to talk about your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book with no cost, no obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com.
All right. Welcome back. Nate Papura on the line, Director of Content at eHealth, eHealth.com and eHealthMedicare.com. And we're doing our best to get a handle on where we are, what may come with the Supreme Court ruling and the Affordable Care Act. And let's do this now, Nate. So let's say it does get unwound and it does, subsidies aren't there, and it just, okay, so now what? What are the next options for people with some sort of alternative that they might have to look at? I guess before we can answer that, would the health insurance companies who are offering these plans that have the subsidy through the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, would they still offer these and if for people to still pay the full price without the subsidy, or would they have too much adverse selection and not be able to sustain it?
Well, that's a question so the short answer is, you know, you'd still be able to keep the plan if you could pay the full premium, right? I mean, the insurance company, there's a contract out there. They can't just sort of stop offering it. But the subsidy is going to go away, so that, you know, they said this is the price, you know, $300 or $250 or whatever. And the government agreed to pay, you know, $100, $200 of that. But now the government can't pay that, so the full price is this. And, you know, if the government's not there to pay the rest of it, all of it falls on you. So you would have to pay the full premium. So, you know, we've done some surveying of customers, and about 83% of our customers said they couldn't afford it without the subsidy. Not all of them, but the people who were on subsidies.
Right.
And then about two-thirds said they'd just drop coverage altogether and go without. And the remaining third said they'd look for something cheaper. And, you know, we obviously say, hey, look for something that's more affordable. And there are some different things that you can do. You know, if that sort of the DEFCON 5 doomsday scenario comes
okay.
to pass.
All right. So if that happened, then they need to have their eHealth.com website ready to go, right?
Well, that's a good, we'd love that. Yeah. you know, call a carrier, talk to somebody like yourself, you know, you may know somebody local but don't go without it. Look, do what you can, to find something that's going to work for you. And there are options. We would assume that if the subsidies were taken away right away, that, the federal government group that runs the program, Health and Human Services, would create a special open enrollment period for people to go back and reshop. That's an assumption. I think it's a pretty good one, but you never know.
Right.
But we would assume you'd have a chance to go back and shop and try and buy something cheaper. So, you know, if you have a platinum plan, these really expensive plans with the very small deductible, you might have a chance to go back and get something with a lower monthly premium and a much higher deductible. That's one way to go. I know the deductible scares some people. There are things like deductible insurance that you can look at, sort of accident, critical illness, things that are $40, $50 a month that basically if you have a catastrophic accident or something, they'll just write you a check and you can pay your mortgage or your car payment or whatever to sort of, or just pay the medical bill itself. So that's one way to go. The other thing, though, that seems really popular right now, we're seeing this a lot with the unsubsidized group. A lot of demand for short-term insurance short-term health insurance demand has really escalated in the last, between 2013 and 2014, because these plans are much, much more affordable than the full-on major medical plans, the Obamacare subsidized plans.
Okay, so there are options. They may not necessarily be as easy or convenient and you know, not necessarily as robust in terms of benefits for amount paid, but there's some fallback position. You know, when you look at where we are, Nate, and all of what's happened, if this is unwound or, you know, again, ruled to be bad law or flawed law, and again, it's ironic, and I don't mean it in a funny ironic, but just strictly ironic that this thing, if it ended up getting unwound because they rushed it through or used the budgetary reconciliation of the two versions of the legislation that were passed by the House and Senate respectively, awfully ironic that things ends up being considered bad law or defective in some way, and that ends up, how much time and energy has been spent on this that we could have spent on something else or not done it at all. Crazy, isn't it?
You know, we certainly feel that way about the exchanges, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we go, boy, you know, we had a really good marketplace that was working great, and,
yeah,
you know, we would have loved to have partnered, and, you know, given that some of these other things have not worked out so well.
I tell you, Nate, they could have saved
the first year. So there's a lot of that going around. Yeah,
they could have saved
a lot of that sort of hand wringing of wish we had done it differently.
Yeah, they could have saved them a lot of money and just said, you know, we're going to work with eHealth.com to make these plans available. Done.
Oh, your lips to God's ears. Well, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, there were some things they needed to do. The subsidy piece was new, and so, you know, it's not that simple. But certainly, you know, we're a very effective enrollment channel. There are others in the private sector as well that, you know, that. I think, you know, the government's doing a better job now of sort of reaching out, and you know, certainly we've had a good working relationship with healthcare.gov, but at the state level, you know, there's still some work to be done. But I think, you know, to your point, you know, it will be unfortunate. I think, you know, there's been progress made, and it would be unfortunate to see it unwound. I'd rather see things sort of move forward and focusing on making things better than sort of starting over from scratch.
All right, Nate. Well, we'll have to leave it at that. We appreciate you coming back. Nate Papura, Director of Content at eHealth, eHealth.com. Thank you, Nate.
David, thank you very much. Always good to talk to you.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.